It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this ninth day of the ninth month of 2021. It's the ninth day of September 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes, and that's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the hours in which this program is live, the 3 hours, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific. And if you pop in right now, you'll be greeted by early arriver Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who says, hey, we might get some rain tonight there in the wilds of Northern California. Yeah. In fact, I saw the margin of, bad fire risks and stuff. It basically ran through Sparky's backyard on a map that I saw. So, Well, I hope y'all do get some rain. I really, really do. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. We have many, ever so many thorns this evening, and we will get to them in short order. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our ninth day of the month subscribers. Partial sponsors of the program that they are. Thank you ever so kindly to James. Thank you, James. And thank you to Ralphs. And thank you to Mary Bell. And thank you to Khalil. And hey, thank you for jumping in, Billable Rick. Much appreciated. So thank you one and all to our ninth day of the month subscribers. That means our fundraising goal is not nearly as terrifying as it could have been, because we had a rather miraculous little prayer meeting Wednesday last night. And so the fundraising goal stands at $600. And that would make so that's all of yesterday and all of today. And if we can knock some of that out, well, maybe Friday on the front porch won't be quite so, need to be quite so miraculous. Okay? Okay. Thank you again for keeping this program on the air as long as you have. Ah, Roger in Oregon has joined the festivities. So it's easy and free to jump in the chat room if you'd like to be part of it. Feel free. Let's see, some thorns. There's some new science out about mountaintop removal. Out of Duke University, Dateline, Durham, North Carolina. It turns out there's a new study out. Duke's done some fantastic work around especially the aquatics, the aquatic effects of mountaintop removal. We've known how bad mountaintop removal is for a long time. And every study just pinpoints a little bit more how desperately we need H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Central Appalachia, one of the most biodiverse places on Earth, is losing biodiversity at a shocking rate. In the little streams that run down the hollers in central Appalachia, there's what might to some be a surprising array of aquatic life. Well, within the September 2021 issue of the journal Ecological Applications, this this new study out of Duke demonstrates that there are 40% fewer species in heavily mountaintop removed watersheds, 40% fewer species than in streams that aren't impacted by this godforsaken assault on everything that lives and is precious on planet Earth. Marie Simonin was one of the researchers. She's a researcher at France's National Research Institute for Agriculture, Food, and Environment, and she's the lead author on the study, and she said, the impacts are really distributed across the whole tree of life. And what they did is they looked at 93 streams, and they looked at streams that were in heavily mined watersheds to streams that were fairly pristine in West Virginia. And Emily Bernhardt, professor and chair of biology at the Duke University, a senior author on the paper as well, said it was really surprising to see how consistent this decline in biodiversity is all across all these really different groups of organisms, starting at really low levels of disturbance. Meanwhile, Madame Dr. Simonin said a very small increase in mining activities in the watershed is already too much. With Bernhardt adding, by the time you get to the EPA's reference point, you've already lost most of the species you're going to lose. So even the EPA standards are insufficient to the task. And remember, these are the headwater streams of watersheds that feed the major rivers that provide drinking water for literally tens of millions of Americans in the southeastern United States. So what they hope to do is call attention to the loss and to the absolute necessity of ending this practice. You know, for years, it was years and years and years ago that due to the pollution of the watersheds, we saw things like, we called it the Simpsons fish, the one with three eyes. Remember from the opening credits of The Simpsons, you know, long, long ago? Fish with twisted spines, fish with two heads. I mean, it's horrible. And then there's the impact on, you know, the human lives as well. And that's what the AIC Act is all about, is, it's a human rights bill. And so, just a reminder at the beginning of the program, because I usually do it at the end, and I suspect a lot of people have just turned the program off by then. Please, 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 please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives, especially if they're a Democrat, and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073. It is called the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. And literally the future of Appalachia depends on this piece of legislation. And this piece of legislation is largely being pushed on an extremely grassroots basis, because of the damn Trump pandemic, my colleagues and I haven't been able to get back to Washington, D.C. to do the on-the-ground work that needs to be done, so we're doing as much as we can with the phones. And the more Democratic members sign on, the better off we'll be. We're rapidly running out of the first session of this Congress. And first sessions of Congresses are always the best sessions for getting something done, if you're going to get anything done, because the second session of every Congress is completely eaten alive by the campaign for the next Congress. I mean, it's just one of the ugly realities of the political system we have to deal with. So I wanted to get that story out there early in the program. 40, imagine that.
40% loss of biodiversity. What is that? What does that mean? Is gone?
Well, in the case of Appalachia, it means there are species disappearing, which aren't found anywhere else on the planet. Fish, macroinvertebrates like, you know, bugs, clams, crustaceans, algae, fungi, bacteria, unicellular organisms called protists. And, you know, those are things that are, you don't necessarily usually expect to see affected, but there's everything that the coal, it's kind of like Trump in a way, everything the coal industry touches dies or is poisoned. And so there we are. H.R. 2073, the AIC Act. It's in the House now. It needs all the help it can get from grassroots, regular, everyday Americans calling, demanding that your representative sign on. Okay? And here's another thorn. Yeah. Our friend Kenda out in Missouri sent this along. Oh, my God. Not far from where I started college. I mean, it was just probably less than an hour's drive. It was the state capital of Missouri, Jefferson City, Jeff City. I remember being there a few times. Well, it turns out that there are various and sundry historical displays in the state capitol there at Jefferson City. Probably, you know, being a maggot state, there's a probably a diorama of Donald Trump taking humanity's first steps on the moon, Donald Trump flying the first airplane. It, you know how. But, no, there was actually, in the capital of the state of Missouri, there was an LGBTQ history exhibit. Because there is a long, you know, the LGBTQ community has a long history of contributions to this country, to its culture, to its society. And it was going swimmingly. The exhibit was supposed to stay up until December the 26th. Yeah. But all of a sudden, out of nowhere, maggot Governor Mike Parsons declared that the LGBTQ exhibit had to be taken down. And he had a handy excuse, too. You know what's coming is a lie, right? I mean, a maggot was uttering it. It had to be a lie. According to Governor Mike Parsons, the Board of Public Buildings didn't approve the LGBTQ history exhibit. And so, therefore, since it was unapproved, it couldn't officially be a display inside the capital of the state of Missouri. Sounds reasonable, right? Sure. Not so much. No, House Minority Leader Democrat Crystal Quaid, she said, funny that, because none of the exhibits in the Missouri State Capitol have ever been approved by the Board of Public Buildings. There's at least 5 years worth of meeting minutes for the Board of Public Buildings in Missouri. And never, not once, ever, has that body discussed any exhibit, museum exhibits, or exhibits in the state capitol. And the former director of the museum said he was director for 24 years. And never, not once, did he ever have to get approval from the Board of Public Buildings regarding what was being exhibited. So, Minority Leader Crystal Quaid is not screwing around. She is a strong woman. She comes from Springfield, Missouri. And she said, if you stick to your story that the LGBTQ exhibit had to come down because the Board of Public Buildings didn't approve it, then to be consistent, you must immediately remove all exhibits the board hasn't approved. Since this is a function the board has never performed, that means stripping the Missouri State Museum bare. Because it's inside the Capitol. Yeah. And she went on and said, if you don't do that, it's a tacit admission that you and the governor have caved to homophobia and engaged in content-based discrimination, the very thing your lie was intended to avoid. And meanwhile, it's all crickets coming from the Department of Natural Resources of Missouri or Mike Parsons' governating offices.
Yeah.
And here's the exhibit that got them all worked up. I wonder how many Missourians actually got to see this. It's called Making History, Kansas City, and the Rise of Gay Rights. And it's extensive, it's informative, it's well done. It lays out an explanation of the rise of LGBTQ rights in Missouri and what was a vibrant scene in Kansas City. Bars like the Jewel Box or the Rail Room, the Colony Bar. And the Colony Bar, they weren't making any bones about it. Their banner on their advertising said, the gayest bar in town, the gayest spot in town. It sat on Troost Avenue Street, I'm not sure what. The Jewel Box Lounge, 1946. And all of this just gave Governor Mike Parsons and the good upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, God-fearing, amosexual, fundamentalist, Christian Republicans a whopping case of the vapors. Oh, they had a terrible, terrible case of the vapors. Yes, they did. It was all just awful. Terrible. Right. And among other things, there's a feature within the display about the use of the legal system to persecute the LGBTQ community in Missouri. And how it was used to keep people from getting, for instance, federal jobs. Because much of the conduct was criminalized. You know, every time someone has had to fight for rights, it seems that there was always someone in the government there to try to stop it. For instance, Executive Order 10450, Ike, the good Republican president, remember him? Yeah, it was 1953 when he signed Executive Order 10450, and it speaks to what can keep someone from getting a federal job. Any criminal, infamous, dishonest, immoral, or notoriously disgraceful misconduct, habitual use of intoxicants to excess, drug addiction, or sexual perversion would keep you out of federal employment. Good for Representative Quaid fighting the good fight. And the Missouri State Senate has one gay member, a Democrat from Kansas City by the name of Greg Razor. He sent a letter to Governor Parson. Yeah, Parson. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. That worked out nicely. And he said the exhibit has to be put back up.
And if it isn't, well, he's going to, Senator Razor is going to get a copy of every blessed record of every time the Board of Public Buildings has ever approved a museum exhibit. In other words, he'll have a great big folder full of nothing because they've never done it. Why does this have to be so hard? Why is it such a constant struggle in godforsaken, benighted places like Missouri or West Virginia or Alabama? They are scared to death of the future, and they know that they themselves are the past. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Rico wanted to clear up something for us. The Have a Show on Me last night was not a challenge. It was a direct contribution, Rico says. You and the Horn community helped save my life. Not exaggerating. In my dark days of yore. I still have PTSD. Yes, it's a real thing, but things are much better now. I believe in paying things forward. Love you so much, I can't repeat that too much. Rico, in the bright, sunshiny Berg. Oh, it was kind of, I bet it was, oh, there's nothing. Pittsburgh's exquisite on a sunny day. A little bit rough in the dead of winter with the foul winds blowing, and, you know, either way you lose if the wind's blowing across the Monongahela or the Allegheny. Either way, it's frigid. But, oh, this time of year in Pittsburgh? Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much, Rico. Thank you. And I don't know. I guess there's a vibe out there. Steve in New York saying, thank you so much for being here. I really needed the program tonight. So did I. And by the way, as to the Missouri LGBTQ plus memorial, Steve notes, I do see a silver lining here. I'm thinking they'll have to take down any Rush hemorrhoid memorial. By the way, we haven't heard his status in a while. Well, he's somewhere north of 50 million pineapples now, but it isn't getting any easier. And the talent he's absolutely untalented because it was on loan from God, remember. And so that margin got called. But he has been sober for a very long time and hasn't had an OxyContin. Yeah, all right, sure. The study of aquaculture in Appalachia. That's invalid. The scientists are French. The study was based on wimpy French fish. Yeah, very true. Randy Radar pointing out, wait, sexual perversion used to keep you out of government? I guess unless they were a senator. Yeah. McCarthy comes to mind. Sure. And his pal, Roy Cohn, who was definitely not gay. He just liked to have sex with men. Still trying to sort that one out. Yeah. Right. And, well, like I said, there's a lot to go into this evening. We have a little bit more detail now on how the Biden administration is responding to the assault on the constitutional right of women to manage their own reproductive organs down in Texas. Merrick Garland held a press conference today to announce that the federal government, the Department of Justice, is suing the shit out of Texas. And I'd like to think that the reason they acted as quickly as they did is to just sort of remind the other insurrectionist states that this could be very, very costly for them. I mean, at some point in time, I guess this is impossible, but why not just turn off the money spigot? But that wouldn't be sporting. But, and I know we've gotten kind of uneasy about Merrick Garland over some of the things that he's done in the last few months. But he seems to have this one right. And he wasn't mincing any words when he took to the podium there at the DOJ.
We want to go now to Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Last week, after the Supreme Court allowed Texas Senate Bill 8 to take effect, I said that the Justice Department was evaluating all options to protect the constitutional rights of women and other persons. Today, after a careful assessment of the facts and the law, the Justice Department has filed a lawsuit against the state of Texas. Our position is set out in detail in our complaint. Its basis is as follows. SB 8 bans nearly all abortions in the state after 6 weeks of pregnancy, before many women even know they are pregnant, and months before a pregnancy is viable. It does so even in cases of rape, sexual abuse, or incest. And it further prohibits any effort to aid the doctors who provide pre-viability abortions or the women who seek them. The act is clearly unconstitutional under long-standing Supreme Court precedent. Those precedents hold, in the words of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that, quote, regardless of whether exceptions are made for particular circumstances, a state may not prohibit any woman from making the ultimate decision to terminate her pregnancy before viability. Texas does not dispute that its statute violates Supreme Court precedent. Instead, the statute includes an unprecedented scheme to, in the Chief Justice's words, quote, insulate the state from responsibility, close quote. It does not rely on the state's executive branch to enforce the law, as is the norm in Texas and everywhere else. Rather, the statute deputizes all private citizens, without any showing of personal connection or injury, to serve as bounty hunters, authorized to recover at least $10,000 per claim from individuals who facilitate a woman's exercise of her constitutional rights. The obvious and expressly acknowledged intention of this statutory scheme is to prevent women from exercising their constitutional rights by thwarting judicial review for as long as possible. Thus far, the law has had its intended effect. Because the statute makes it too risky for an abortion clinic to stay open, abortion providers have ceased providing services. This leaves women in Texas unable to exercise their constitutional rights and unable to obtain judicial review at the very moment they need it. This kind of scheme to nullify the Constitution of the United States.
And there's the magic word. He used it. We were talking about it a few nights ago. He just used it. This scheme to nullify the Constitution of the United States. It is nullification. And that is why I have said that in terms of constitutional rights, this is 2021's answer to 160 years ago in Charleston Harbor. Texas has fired a shot at the Constitution of the United States via that old, vicious, pernicious doctrine, discredited, held unconstitutional. There aren't even any valid arguments to be had in its favor. Nullification. Way, way, way back when he was president, just a reminder, Andrew Jackson, genocidal maniac that he was, nonetheless, in dealing with the state of South Carolina, said that he was more than happy to get on his horse and ride down to South Carolina, and that he would start hanging nullificationists. He'd hang the first one he found, and then he'd move on, and he'd hang the second one, and he would hang every nullificationist that he set eyes on. And they took him seriously. You know, for a little while, at least.
Is one that all Americans, whatever their politics or party, should fear. If it prevails, It may become a model for action in other areas.
That would be that domino effect that we also discussed on this program. God, we're so out in front of all of this. It's amazing. But I do disagree with his use of the word fear. This nullification horseshit is something that Americans should fear. That may be true. But when you're speaking to the American people like this, no. With all due respect, Mr. Attorney General, Texas's act of nullification is something that every decent American should despise, should loathe, should detest, should hate, because it is nothing if not a clear, crystal clear declaration of animus toward constitutional governance in the United States of America. And if that is not despicable, nothing is.
By other states and with respect to other constitutional rights and judicial precedents. Nor need one think long or hard to realize the damage that would be done to our society if states were allowed to implement laws that empower any private individual to infringe on another's constitutionally protected rights in this way.
You mean like maybe deputizing an entire state to file lawsuits against good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, ammo-sexual, Christian, Republican gun owners as potential mass murderers? Something like that? Of course, I guess if you're the Attorney General, you can't say that part out loud, but it's kind of my job to interpret these sorts of things. Hoo-wee! Oh, yeah, because remember, you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Your offer is acceptable.
The United States has the authority and the responsibility to ensure that no state can deprive individuals of their constitutional rights through a legislative scheme specifically designed to prevent the vindication of those rights. The United States also brings this suit to assert other federal interests that SB 8 unconstitutionally impairs. Among other things, SB 8 conflicts with federal law by prohibiting federal agencies from exercising their authorities and carrying out their responsibilities under federal laws relating to abortion services. It also subjects federal employees and non-governmental partners who implement those laws to civil liability and penalties. Among the federal agencies and programs whose operations the statute unconstitutionally restricts are the Labor Department's Job Corps program, the Defense Department's TRICARE Health program, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, the Bureau of Prisons, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and the Office of Personnel Management. The complaint therefore seeks a declaratory judgment that SB 8 is invalid under the Supremacy Clause and the 14th Amendment, is preempted by federal law, and violates the doctrine of intergovernmental immunity. The United States also seeks a permanent and preliminary injunction prohibiting enforcement of the statute against the state of Texas, including against the state's officers, employees, and agents, and private parties it has effectively deputized who would bring suit under SB 8. The Department of Justice has a duty to defend the Constitution of the United States and to uphold the rule of law. Today, we fulfill that duty by filing the lawsuit I have just described. Now, before I take some questions, I want to say a few words to the American people on the eve of the 20th anniversary of the attacks of September 11th, 2001.
Well, I think we can take that part as read. And he you know, we're going to guard against the terrorists. But, I mean, I listened to the whole thing, but here's the bottom line. You think about 9/11, and you think about terrorism from other countries.
But as we have recently learned, the terrorism that grows within our own boundaries is far more concerning. And, well, I mean, okay, sure, why not?
Or say, can replace the loss so many endured that day. Nothing can change the profound way the events of September 11th altered us, individually and collectively as a nation. And let there be no doubt, the threat from terrorists, from foreign terrorists, like those involved in the September 11th attack, is one we must constantly guard against. But what we can do, and what we have done, is learn from the past to better anticipate and prepare for the next threat and to seek to disrupt it. As we mark this anniversary, we rededicate ourselves at the Justice Department to doing all we can to protect the American people from terrorism in all its forms, whether originating from abroad or at home, and to doing so in a manner that is consistent with our values and the rules.
There is that, whether it originates abroad or at home. And frankly, the at-home part is far more dangerous than the abroad part. A lot more dangerous. Which brings into play another piece of information. A search warrant has been served on a lawyer for the Oath Keepers. Mm-hmm. And she tweeted about it yesterday, Wednesday, the 8th. The FBI served the search warrant on her, and she is counsel for Oath Keepers. Kelly Sorrell, and she spells it K-E-L-L-Y-E. Okay. Kelly Sorrell, capital S, little O, capital R-E-L-L-E. Kelly Sorrell said that the FBI showed up with a search warrant and snagged her telephone. They have all my clients and my comms. It's unethical as shit on their part. So a couple of weeks ago, I accidentally stumbled across the deep state ties to MyPillow, Mike Lindell. When I did, I received wrath from the tie to a large firm. Yesterday, my cell phone was taken by the FBI with a search warrant. I'm doing nothing but seeking the truth. I hope you are too. She incoherently tweeted. But interestingly, in line with what Attorney General Garland was saying there, they're on guard against terrorism at home and abroad. What's interesting, however, is that in this case, the FBI appears to be investigating the Oath Keepers for seditious conspiracy. Which is about as strong a phrase as we've heard used since the insurrection of January 6th. You know, remember, most of the people being prosecuted and pleading out to one count of stream littering and dropping gum on a public street and getting pathetic, you know, slaps on the wrist. According to the article in Mother Jones that Kelly Sorrell, Mother Jones writing, those include crimes, talking about the January 6th insurrectionists, those include crimes with which many people who entered the Capitol have been charged, from destruction of government property to trespassing and obstruction of Congress. The agents are also seeking evidence of false statements and obstruction of justice, including destruction of evidence, according to the search warrant. Notably, the warrant also lists seditious conspiracy among the suspected crimes. That's kind of a big deal.
Dan Friedman wrote the report. You can find it over at Mother Jones. FBI seizes Oath Keeper lawyer's phone in seditious conspiracy investigation. And they identify Kelly Sorrell as the general counsel for the Oath Keepers. And she's all snuggly with right close to the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes. He has not been charged, of course not, but apparently is still the subject of an investigation. Yeah. Seventeen Oath Keepers have been charged with conspiring to stop Congress from certifying Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. Stuart Rhodes, meanwhile, he's identified in court documents as Person One. I guess they had to call him Person One because Individual One was taken. FBI seized his phone back in May. And of course he says, I ain't done nothing wrong. And there's absolutely nothing, by the way, in it. All these pathetic acts of diversion, like I said, Kelly Sorrell, who holds herself out on Twitter as Kelly Sorrell, attorney.
So a couple of weeks ago, I accidentally stumbled across the deep state ties to Lindell. When I did, I received wrath from the tie to a large firm. Yesterday, my cell phone was taken by the FBI with a search warrant. I'm doing nothing but seeking the truth. I hope you are, too.
Okay. So, wait. She's being persecuted by the federal government because she found out that Mr. Meth Pillow has ties to the deep state? Oh, God. Maybe, could it be that there are 5G barcode transponders in those Mr. Meth Pillow pillows? Oh, no. It's worse than we thought. But no, again, nothing in the warrant about Mike Lindell, Mr. Meth Pillow. Instead, it's all about January the 6th and what she may have known about it. Yeah. So we'll just have to watch. We'll have to watch the space. But it's interesting that they're in conjunction with what, again, what Attorney General Garland said about potential terrorists in this country. Because the Oath Keepers are a terrorist organization. They make no bones about it. The same with the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters staff, executive staff. Yeah. And I hope, I hope they just, hope in one hand, you know. Because the lawsuit is going to have to be heard. I don't know. It's a suit between states. Maybe it's going to be heard in D.C. And that'll keep some cowboy hat-wearing maggot dickhead from hearing the case in Texas. Steve noting, I got to say, he really didn't pull punches. I was hoping he would use the term bounty hunters. Good on you, A.G. Garland. Well, he has to maintain a certain level of decorum, you know. And you'll notice he got the language right. Women and other persons. Well, that was a nod toward a new degree of inclusivity coming from the Attorney General's office. You know, that's why the term, and we discussed it previously, that's why the term pregnant people exists. Or people who can become pregnant, because there are a lot of
trans men out there who can and do. And so it's more than appropriate to say women and other persons. I take that as taking into account non-binary people and trans men. Mm-hmm. Oh, I did. I forgot, Megan pointing out. You forgot Denny Hastert serving time for possession of child porn. Oh, God, there are so many pervy, skeevy, filthy Republicans. It's damn it, Megan, it's hard to keep track of them all. And going back to that that quote from the executive order in 1953, may I digress, asks Ron and Raleigh. Did you say that Ike said you couldn't hold a federal job if you were guilty of moral turpitude and whatnot? Wasn't J. Edgar Hoover, nothing like a Hoover when you're dealing with dirt. Oh, wait a minute. FBI director then? Why, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, he was. Ron noting, I guess flouncing around in a flowery frock didn't count as perversion for Ike. Well, what Ike didn't know didn't hurt him. And, of course, it's okay if you're a Republican as well. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. What a mess. I mean, it doesn't forgive his incredible awfulness. But what a mess J. Edgar Hoover was. Passing as white, spending every day worried that somebody would figure out that he was passing as white. And equally worried that somehow or another somebody might find out about his stunning cocktail frock collection. And that closeted shit will make you mean. It'll make you do awful things to other people just to preserve your own sense of security. And of course, J. Edgar died in the closet. More on Kelly Sorrell. Oh, Steve acting as a member of the Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee. This from the Above the Law blog. After being fired over capital insurrection, lawyer finds legal work suing pretty much every politician and Mark Zuckerberg. And it's about Paul Davis, formerly of Goosehead Insurance. Kelly Sorrell, and by the way, she ran for House of Representatives from the state of Texas and lost. They're suing, or they filed a suit back in January on behalf of Latinos for Trump, Blacks for Trump, and a whole bunch of individually named plaintiffs. Yeah. And, you know, when you have to put this in the body of your complaint, you know that there's going to... this complaint is not a 2020 presidential election fraud lawsuit. This is not a Sidney Powell lawsuit. This is not a Rudy Giuliani lawsuit. This is not a Lynn Wood lawsuit. This is not a Team Trump lawsuit. This is not a Republican lawsuit. This is not a Democrat lawsuit. But nonetheless, asked the court to throw out the results of the 2020 election. Oh, what a... what a delight she is. Writing there at Above the Law, Catherine Rubino says, the complaint asks the court to bar the Department of Justice, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or any other federal agency from taking either Davis or Sorrell into custody for their actions on January 6th, absent a showing for good cause by clear and convincing evidence that said counsel committed some overt and intentional act of violence that directly resulting in substantial injury to the person of another. Ms. Rubino noting, as if that's the legal standard for arrest. It's cute how they're just pushing ahead like unlawful entry and trespass aren't a thing you can get arrested for. Wow. You know, some of these lawyers have access to some really, really, really apparently bad acid. Yeah. As to DC lingo, Megan says,
As I said before, D.C. politicians and government employees have a way of speaking that's acceptable to the Beltway crowd. What Merrick Garland said today could best be translated as, lawyer up, asshole! And to other states considering this abhorrent law, if you're thinking of passing this, you'd best lawyer up, too. Because we're bringing all the guns. We may wind up we'll just wind up naming the entire Confederacy Garlandia. He's going to own your ass, one hopes. But after the trial court level, there's an appeal court level, and then after the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, well, of course, there are those 9 unelected black robe judges. That's how Republicans always describe them, isn't it? Yeah. Right. And it's become all too predictable what those goons will do. Oh, and Joe Biden, bless his heart, and I mean that in a good way, is really rapidly running out of fucks to give about anti-vaxxers and anti-vax governors and states. And so he's the vaccine is fully, it's fully federally approved. He made some remarks today, President Biden did, in which he made it abundantly clear that, well, he's pretty well disgusted.
Despite the fact that for almost 5 months, free vaccines have been available in 80,000 different locations, we still have nearly 80 million Americans who have failed to get the shot. And to make matters worse, there are elected officials actively working to undermine the fight against COVID-19. Instead of encouraging people to get vaccinated and mask up, they're ordering mobile morgues for the unvaccinated dying from COVID in their communities. This is totally unacceptable. Third, if you wonder how all this adds up, here's the math. The vast majority of Americans are doing the right thing. Nearly three-quarters of the eligible have gotten at least one shot. But one-quarter has not gotten any. That's nearly 80 million Americans not vaccinated. And a country as large as ours, that's 25% minority. That 25% can cause a lot of damage, and they are. The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals, are overrunning emergency rooms and intensive care units, leaving no room for someone with a heart attack or pancreatitis or cancer. And fourth, I want to emphasize that the vaccines provide very strong protection from severe illness from COVID-19. I know there's a lot of confusion and misinformation, but the world's leading scientists confirm that if you are fully vaccinated, your risk of severe illness from COVID-19 is very low.
Plain and simple, and like I said, fresh out of fucks to give. Called them out. How about that? He called the COVIDiots out, the anti-vaxxers, the mask holes, the spreadnecks, called them out as a group. The 25% of Americans who are stupid, with their stupidity, their willful ignorance, their viciousness, can do a great deal of harm, as we continue to see. I was talking earlier today with someone I know, and I said, and they work in the hospitality industry. I said, "My God, we're going to have Bridge Day." And he said, "I know. This place is going to be on fire after that." I said, "The whole state, because 1 in 9 West Virginians, and God only knows what it is in a place like Talabama, but 1 in 9 West Virginians has it." Obviously, that's over 10%. Has it.
And somehow or another, we seem unable to reach them. So, you know, we've tried carrots, and now the Biden administration is going to the stick. And so President Biden has made it clear that he will move to require tens of millions more Americans, working Americans, to get vaccinated. And he will go so far as to say that if a federal employee refuses, they can face disciplinary measures. And this is all within the purview of things he can do with an executive order. And it's past time. You know, I think back to the fact that that city government caved to the cop union in Portland. And, you know, these are the same cops who, when the Proud Boys or the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff attack peaceful protesters, it's the Portland police who sit there and watch it happen and give their tacit approval to these right-wing fascist thugs. I'm trying to find the downside in a bunch of those assholes actually resigning their cushy little jobs as Portland cops. God, come on, people. I mean, it must make the decent people in Portland absolutely furious. I mean, that's my guess. And so, Joe Biden is wanting a rule that says that if a business has more than 100 workers, that he wants either mandatory vaccinations or weekly testing. And this is pretty, it's sad that this is pretty bold, but this is pretty bold. And Joe Biden's pissed. And he has a right to be pissed. Because there are 80 million Americans who do not give a tinker's damn about anybody but themselves. And what's more, they don't think much of themselves either, because they're willing, I guess, to get this and freaking die. There's a website out there. It's called sorryantivaxxer.com. Sorryantivaxxer with two X's. .com, sorryantivaxxer.com. And it's a continuing list of people who didn't get the vaccine and now are quite sorry. Donald P. Tice of Anchorage, Alaska, the person behind sorryantivaxxer.com, says, "I'll just let Donald tell you. This will be a short post. Karma. Oh, well." He tweeted, Donald P. Tice did, "I have a plan. Inject me with the coronavirus. If I die, then all of your paranoid bullshit is legit. If I don't die, then you all are fucking deceived political pawns. Let's go. Bring it on. Alaska as one. America as one." And then someone named Jennifer Tice tweeted, I really haven't stopped crying since I found out you were gone last night, Donald P. Tice. This makes no sense. COVID killed your lungs. I can't process it." Bye, Donald. Or Suzette Schaefer of Zephyr Hills, Florida, anti-vaxxer. Well, she blamed She blamed Remdesivir for the fact that the boyfriend died of COVID. And then it posted a bunch of anti-vax info. Fred Lowry, age 66, Volusia County, Florida, member of the city council, a cue ball, an anti-vaxxer, a COVID hoaxer, in the ICU with COVID. Yeah. And it's a huge list. Anti-vax community organizer Richard Lindeman, age 50, Tri-Cities, Washington, dead from COVID. Jorge Lis, age 46, of Valencia, Spain, a professional motorcyclist. And my Spanish is horrible, my pronunciation worse, but verdadera antivacuna muerto por COVID. I think we know what that was. Michael Lowe and his wife, adamant anti-vaxxers, dead. Lisa Sowards, age 56, Hickory, North Carolina, anti-vaxxer. Her mother, and daughter all got COVID. Lisa went home to be with the Lord. Here's Larry Mannin, age 73, of Harrison, Arkansas, an anti-vaxxer. He was out there hustling and barking and grunting and hooting about the mighty transformative healing powers of horse paste. He's dead. Or wait. Let's channel our inner. He dead. Here's a Muslim natural healer and anti-vaxxer from Sydney, Australia. He's still fighting COVID. Yeah. Here's vaccine hesitant Josh Tidmore of Montgomery, Alabama. Died of COVID, leaving behind a lovely photograph of him holding a cup with the face of Donald J. Trump on it. On and on and on and on. And with every one of these who got it and died, how many did they infect on the way out the door? Mm-hmm. So whatever Joe Manchin, Jesus, Robin. Whatever Joe Biden can think of to do, whatever his ace team can come up with, I hope they do. 1 in 9 in West Virginia have it. Remember Paul from Parts Unknown's Lily in the Pond, Lilies in the Pond analogy? Yeah, here we are. Thanks, Steve. By the way, that 1 in 9, according to Randy Radar, doing the ciphering for us, that's 11.111111%. Mm-hmm. What's that? Lee in New York says, Michael Smirkanish is telling people he wants to be asked to show proof of his vaccination. Huh. Yeah, let's find out what this is about.
Let me ask you what you think about this.
Well, I'm a Howard super fan, and when he said it, I was cheering him on as I was listening. You know, we talk a lot in this country about the one percenters. There is a great spread right now in the New York Post, of all places, about the 99 percenters, drawing on the fact that according to CDC data, January through the end of August, 99% of all hospitalizations for COVID-related illness, the unvaccinated, those who are not fully vaccinated. Similarly, 99% of COVID deaths, January through the end of August, all those unvaccinated. So the time for cajoling, I think, is over. We're no longer dealing with vaccine hesitant. I'm not going to say that anymore. It's the vaccine obstinate. And we got to draw a line in the sand and force people to get vaccinated. One last thing, if I may, this is both happy and sad at the same time. I'm dying to show people my vax card. The only place I've been asked to show it was at a Dead & Company concert. We got to give credit to the remnants of the Grateful Dead. In this cloud of lawlessness, We all knew we had to show our vax card to get into the show, and we were fine with it.
Yeah, I see Berman chuckling. He loves that. I thought I would be carrying my vaccine card around, showing it places. And it's only been, I used it to get into my kids' school so I could volunteer at the library. That's really like the only place where I've had to show my card. And I just wonder what you think. We've had people on the show, Michael, who, you know, we had the mom of a veteran whose son couldn't get into the ICU because of people with COVID in the ICU, and he died because of the delay in care. So I wonder what you make of this conversation about hospitals prioritizing vaccinated or unvaccinated people in a crisis of care situation.
So I don't think it's just the stuff of a late night routine by Jimmy Kimmel. It was Nancy Gibbs, the former editor at Time, in an essay for the Washington Post. It stands out in my mind because I used it for radio fodder. She put forth this idea that if we're allocating scarce resources, we ought to have consideration for that fact. I'll give you another example that I view similarly. There was a representative of Kaiser Health, it may have been their CEO, I forget her name, who said, why aren't we charging more for insurance among the unvaccinated in the same way that we factor in smoking and we factor in risky behavior? These are people making a conscious decision not to get vaccinated, defying the science. And I'm sorry, I'm tired of trying to coax them along. The time for coaxing is over. So give me Governor Justice, give me Howard Stern, and give me Jimmy Kimmel.
You know, Michael, I like to say I need a miracle.
Okay, no, not Governor Justice. You know, I posted that, I went to my Twitter account, and I posted that clip last night of Dither and Jim sitting there, you know, land sakes of mercy, what are you people thinking? There ain't no tracking device in the vaccine. It's in your fucking pocket. I played it. I think she may be able to hear me through the wall. I don't know. I played that for Agnes last night. we had one of those serial laugh moments where we just couldn't stop. Because it's like the poor old fucker just finally realized what it means to be a maggot governor. You poor dumb billionaire. Did you not know who put you in office? Did you not know that it was a bunch of COVIDiots and spread necks and mask holes? Land, my land sakes of mercy. Yeah, I know. But I mean, there are some realities here that they touched on. Randy Radar said, "I pay my health care every month, but I can't access it due to the COVIDiots and the spread necks." Yeah. And you know, today is 2 months to the day from a very big day for me. Unfortunately, in one of the most COVID negligent states in the union, and all I can do for the next 2 months is sit and cross my fingers and hope that the goddamn COVIDiots in Talabama don't destroy my opportunity to do something that's been a long time coming. I do have a Twitter account. It's the same old account. I just changed the handle. It's now Robin Kincaid WV, RobynKincaidWV. It's the same account I had before. If you had that one, if you had the old one, Alma, you should have. It should have just seamlessly transferred. I hope it did. It's not a new account or anything. But, well. And I guess the conversation at CNN there with Berman and Brianna Keeler and Michael Smirkanish, the Chiron underneath says, "Divide deepens. Howard Stern to anti-vaxxers. Fuck your freedom." Huh? Yeah? At this point in time, there's no other way to think of them than just, you know, dirty people.
Because somebody who, I mean, that's pretty dirty, isn't it? Somebody who actively courts infection and makes it more likely that they're going to spread it. Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa noting, perhaps the Wuhan lab, bankrolled by Bill Gates and the Jews, of course, deliberately designed the plague to cull to stupid. You know, you'd think they would have had their own vaccine first, though, but oh well. If they did, it was diabolical, and it's diabolically effective, Brother Deacon. So here we are at we are into the second hour of the program. No, not WB, WVV Lee. Are you owned by Warner Brothers? Just asking. Yeah, I'm the Warner sister Dot. ROBYNKINCAIDWV, as in very, etc. Visible. Mm. And so, as Michael Smirkanish noted, there are more and more people just saying, nope, fuck them now.
Thank you for being here. You know, I have to say, when I walk into a room at home, nobody claps. There's no clapping. It's good to be back. You know, I've been on vacation since the end of June. And when I left, I assumed things would be back to normal when I got back. I thought we'd have, you know, full audience with no masks. I was ready to get back to French kissing the guests. And yeah, here we are, masks, half an audience. I leave you people alone for 2 months. You start taking horseworm medicine? What a weird summer. Britney is free and every woman in the state of Texas isn't. It's, you know, this was the second year I took the summer off. It wasn't a secret. We announced it. I had guest hosts lined up, and yet people still were confused. These are comments from YouTube, a fraction of the many expressions of concern, starting to get worried. Where's Jimmy? Seriously, though, where the hell did Jimmy go? Jimmy still in rehab? Is Jimmy Kimmel on secret suspension? Seems too long for vacation. Does Kimmel have COVID? Is Jimmy alive? I feel like I haven't seen him for a long time. Jimmy's dead, right? No, Jimmy's not dead, unless we're all dead, in which case, maybe we're all in hell, I don't know. All I know is it's very good to be wearing makeup again. And so how?
Well, amen to that.
I want to ask one thing, because the hardest part of being at home while the show was still going on was watching Guillermo cheat on me with all the other hosts. Like, oh, great show, great show. You seem to be having a lot of fun.
Jimmy, listen, it was weird. It was different, but I miss you, Jimmy. I love you, and everybody here, they miss you.
Well, thank you. Liberace style, you go.
That's the only way to go.
Before I went away for vacation, I said, I am not coming back until I get a chandelier, damn it. I hope you had a relaxing Labor Day. It was not a fun Labor Day weekend, COVID-wise. The number of new cases is up more than 300% from a year ago. Dr. Fauci said that if hospitals get any more overcrowded, they're going to have to make some very tough choices about who gets an ICU bed. That choice doesn't seem so tough to me. Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy.
You know, I guess we're there. When the suits at Network allow that joke to go out, we're pretty much there. And what's to argue with? Really?
We've still got a lot of pandimwits out there. People are still taking this ivermectin. This poison, you know, the poison control centers have seen this spike in calls from people taking this livestock medicine to fight the coronavirus, but they won't take the vaccine, which is crazy. It's like if you're a vegan and you're just like, no, I don't want a hamburger. Give me that can of Alpo instead. One of the reasons these sea biscuits are opting for ivermectin is because they don't trust Big Pharma, which is fine, I guess, except for the fact that ivermectin is made by Merck, which is the fourth largest pharmaceutical company in the world. And even Merck is telling people to cut it out. They released a statement saying, Ivermectin has no scientific basis for potential therapeutic effect against COVID. There's no meaningful evidence for clinical activity or clinical efficacy in patients with COVID-19 disease. And there's a concerning lack of safety data in the majority of studies. Listen, if a pharmaceutical company says, please don't take the drug we're selling, you should probably listen to them. Or you could just go with a TikTok posted by a disgraced veterinarian instead. Meanwhile, these poor horses are like, hey, I have worms. I need that stuff. There are worms in my butt. Do you understand? Ivermectin did get a big endorsement over the weekend from one of America's top medical minds, none other than Sandy Hook denier slash internet lunatic Alex Jones.
You know what this is? This is ivermectin for humans. It won a Nobel Prize as an antiviral. And this is inhalable, or these are the tablet steroids. So let me show you. I was going to do this anyways earlier. See this? See this, Fauci? You see this, Bill Gates? I'm going to kill those prions, you bastard murderers. You're going to hit me with a bioweapon, you monster. You want to suppress me? You want to kill me, you son of a bitch? You demon? You think I'm easy to kill? Think I'm going to roll over to your crap? No.
I've never seen someone that mad drink a Topo Chico before. It kind of came out of nowhere. Who'd have guessed he'd wash it down with that? I would have thought maybe some kind of nacho-flavored Bang energy drink, but nope, give me a Topo Chico.
Mm. Of course, we had that clip before Kimmel ran it, but, you know, I wasn't on, well, kind of. Got back from vacation before he did. But my God. Really? What's left to say to them? I remember years and years and years ago, our buddy, Reverbo, the human boy, said, you know, we've been sitting here idling the bus waiting for other Americans to get on it and come along with us. And sooner or later, you just close the bus doors and you leave. And I don't know what I'm going to do when Bridge Day gets. I mean, I do know what I'm going to do when Bridge Day gets here. Stay in the hell home. Posting a guard at the door. And it's golly season here now, which is a really, really big deal because the white water is just amazing now that they're releasing the water from Summersville Lake. The buses are running out the road day in and day out. All kinds of people from all over the place. And whew, don't look for a lot of masks. Nope, don't do it. Anyway, like I said, we're into the second hour of the program, and we got $600 to try to raise this evening. Sorry. You know, the part where I say we got $600 to raise is, you know, not anywhere near the 20 minutes worth of commercials that you know, for-profit broadcasting puts out there, let alone the budget. But yeah, we're at $600 to go. And knocking that down however we can. You know, hey, it'd be great to be fully funded through Wednesday if we could knock out 300 of it. It'd be wonderful. But as it is, that's where it stands. And if anybody wants to help, you know, of course, the interface is right there on the main page at headon.live. Also, there's Venmo and, you know, U.S. Postal Service, you know, what have you. But it is Thursday, and that means we've got the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen all queued up. And this is, of course, Conversation Radio. And anybody who wants to do a little conversating, you're welcome to chime in. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, gone, but anything but forgotten. And you can always get in on Skype, too. Bob Kincaid Horn will get you through to the program. And, well, let's see what the evening brings us. But right now, let's check in with Brad and Desi, shall we?
It's Thursday, September 9, 2021.
Climate change poses an existential threat to our lives, to our economy, and the threat is here. We can stop it from getting worse.
Biden pushes for infrastructure resilience following Ida's devastation. Toxic chemicals and sewage left swirling in hurricane's wake. Plus,
the last gallon of leaded gasoline was sold in Algeria in July.
A new milestone. The world finally got the lead out.
All of those milestones and mayhem straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I think we're at one of those inflection points where we either act or we're going to be in real, real trouble.
Oh, we're in trouble. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Tessie Doyen, it's good to be back. Luckily, there were no big green stories over the past week, but I've got this today from the League of Conservation Voters, who have now told every Democrat in Congress that if they do not support federal climate action in Joe Biden's Build Back Better bill, their action fund will not endorse any of those Democrats.
Good. Putting their money where their mouth is.
Yes, ma'am. What do you got for us today?
Well, we are in peak hurricane season right now.
Great.
And Tropical Storm Mindy quickly formed on Wednesday and hit Florida's panhandle just hours later. Climate scientists have observed a trend toward faster intensification of storms due to warming oceans, and that gives communities no time to prepare. Mindy is the 13th named storm of the 2021 season. The average date for the 13th named storm used to be October 25th.
Wow. And really, this storm did just spin out of nowhere and boom, made landfall.
Yep. And in the wake of last week's Category 4 Hurricane Ida, as we go to air, the death toll has jumped to at least 82 across four states. If there is any good news from Ida, it is that New Orleans levees, pumps, and storm surge floodgates mostly held, but the state's electric grid did not. With Ida knocking down more transmission lines than Hurricane Katrina, Ike, Delta, and Zeta combined. The lights are finally back on in New Orleans, but areas outside the city are still without power. Ida's destruction forced the shutdown of 51 municipal drinking water systems, and more than 300,000 people are still without access to clean water.
Well, you know what wouldn't hurt? Burying those power lines. I understand there's a bill working its way through Congress, which might be able to help pay for important stuff like that.
New reports are now emerging of extensive water and air pollution caused by Ida, which passed directly over one of the nation's primary oil and gas industry hubs in Louisiana. Before and after the storm, oil and gas facilities vented dangerous chemicals and gases into the atmosphere. The U.S. Coast Guard is now investigating nearly 2,000 reports of oil and chemical spills, including an 11-mile-long oil spill from an abandoned well. A recent GAO report found that the oil and gas industry has abandoned more than 18,000 miles of decommissioned pipelines in the Gulf of Mexico alone that continue to pose a pollution threat.
Wow. Create the problem and then abandon it.
President Joe Biden this week visited victims of Ida's destruction in Louisiana, Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey, where the storm and its remnants unleashed historic rainfall and deadly flash floods that demolished infrastructure and caused billions of dollars in damages. On Tuesday, Biden unequivocally drew the connection between man-made climate change and this summer's extreme weather disasters that have affected nearly one in three Americans. He bluntly stated that U.S. infrastructure is clearly not ready for accelerating climate change impacts and urged Congress to pass his Build Back Better infrastructure jobs plan.
When I talk about building back better, I mean you can't build to what it was before this last storm. You got to build better so if the storm occurred again, there would be no damage. And so, folks, we got to listen to the scientists and the economists and the national security experts. They all tell us this is code red.
A new analysis this week by the Department of Energy finds that if Congress passes Biden's clean energy policies, doubling of U.S. solar energy projects could provide at least 40% of the nation's electricity by 2035 and employ as many as 1.5 million people, all without increasing electricity prices.
Or increasing emissions.
True. Congressional Democrats are now trying to hammer out the details of that massive budget reconciliation bill, including those crucial climate climate policies that the League of Conservation Voters has demanded in order to create millions of jobs, hardening the nation's infrastructure resilience. And finally, the world has finally stopped using toxic leaded gasoline, a century after it was developed and 50 years after its dangers were established. Leaded gasoline was phased out due to its high toxicity and links to lower IQs and higher rates of violent crime. The global phase-out of leaded fuel has prevented more than 1.5 million premature deaths and saved nearly $3 trillion per year from improved health and lower crime rates.
Yeah, but we still sold it until 2021. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And it's a bad time.
All right, we're almost at the halfway mark of the program this evening. And thanks very kindly to Donald. Donald just jumped in and helped us knock down some of Wednesday. And that's a big help. Thank you, Donald. Thank you very kindly. Being fully funded for Wednesday would make tomorrow's Friday on the Front Porch considerably more awesome. Thank you. Thank you a bunch. Oh, and thanks to David in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, look, it's Brian Kemp. God, for a couple of minutes there, we thought he was a decent human being, didn't we? And particularly when his Secretary of State stood up to nitwit Nero. Well, how silly we were, huh? Nope, still a dick. No sooner had President Biden announced that he was going to pursue federal vaccine requirements, Brian Kemp jumped out there and said, "We will pursue every legal option available to the state of Georgia to stop this here blatant unlawful overreach by the Biden administration to try to keep Americans from dying because we want Americans to die." Oh, I added that last part. I'd like to think that the executive power of the president would be, you know, respected by the Supreme Court, but those people were not put on the Supreme Court. Your Amy COVID Barrett Justice Handmaid and Brett Kavanaugh with his dodgy debt retirement, and well, the rest of the nasty pack, they weren't put there to respect the power of the presidency, if it's being exercised, of course, by a Democrat. No, hell no. Georgia, of course, has among the lowest vaccine rates in the country. They're at almost 45% of Georgia is fully vaccinated. Got to stop this blatantly unlawful overreach by the Biden administration. Cause real freedom. Somebody in the band strike up Dixie, would you? Yeah. All but just a tiny handful of the ICU of ICU beds in Georgia are full, and in the vast majority of cases, full of people who refuse to get the vaccine. Fuck them. No, really, just fuck them. Unvaccinated, seriously ill COVID-19 patients are somewhere around 33% of the state's hospitalized patients. There are 5,935 COVID-19 patients in Georgia hospitals, and again, north of 90% of them are the unvaccinated, who, along the way, may very well have spread it among their dirty unvaccinated ranks, but also may have spread it to someone who couldn't get the vaccine because of health limitations, or spread it to someone who had those comorbidities we talked about. And there you go. And why is Brian Kemp doing it? Because he's running for re-election next year. In 2022, Brian Kemp will be up for re-election, and he knows, you know, he's not quite as slow on the uptake as, say, make West Virginia great big old governor, Dither and Jim Fat Hamlet Justice. No. And as someone who is carrying more weight than she should be, I'm not fat shaming. I mean, Hamlet and, well, never mind. But no, he's Dither and Jim figured out yesterday, as we pointed out, that, hey, wait a minute, I had a bunch of stupid people elect me. Well, at least I got the job. Still ain't going to be a basketball coach this year. I don't know what I'm going to do if I ain't got basketball to coach. At least I won't have to coach none of them little trans girls. God, hell spawn that they are. No, Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice is considerably behind the curve, unlike Brian Kemp, who realizes if he finally does something intelligent relative to the virus, he's done. Because there'll be somebody primarying him from the right, hollering about how he didn't sufficiently smooch the tuchus of COVID Caligula. Mm-mm. And so he's got it. We're going to stop that federal overreach is what we're going to do. Because one minute they're making you take the vaccine, and the next minute they're taking your guns. I mean, I'm making that up, but really, how far off are we? And speaking of trying to get idiot Georgians to get, and not all, but, you know, come on. Steve from Georgia Stan would tell us the same thing. Now, Brian Kemp said, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Mm-mm, no. No. No, you can lead a horse to the ivermectin, but you can't make him think. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I mean, that is not government's role. Our role is to educate people and to tell them the truth. Well, when do you plan on starting to do that there, Bri-Bri? Jesus, these people. Just so, so, so awful. And more Georgians are going to die. I wonder what would happen if the major hospital systems in Georgia said, yeah, no, sorry, if you're not vaccinated, no vent for you. Because how long have we been vaccinating now? I mean, 9 months? 8 months? 8+ months? Around 8 months? Close the bus doors and drive the bus away. I mean, meanwhile, Governor Rona death sentence in Florida, David tells us, has filed an emergency appeal of the case he lost regarding school mask mandates. As John Cooper put it on Twitter, in an effort to kill as many Florida school children and teachers as possible. Hashtag Ron DeSantis. You know, this is not... No. The Republicans try to frame it that way, but, you know, being Republicans, they're just liars. This is not a question of freedom versus non-freedom, liberty versus non-liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Woof. This is life versus death. And is so often the case, well, the Republicans line up as a miserable, shit-eaten death cult. Yeah. And, I mean, these Southern governors are behaving just like Southern governors 160 years ago. I mean, it's almost amazing if you didn't already know. But, you know, McGubna, down in South Carolina, Stan, said, the mocking dream has turned into a nightmare under President Biden and the radical Democrats. They have declared war against capitalism, thumbed their noses at the Constitution, and empowered our enemies abroad. Yet what? The radical Democrats. Oh, you silly fuck. Rest assured,
McGovernor continued, "Rest assured, we will fight them to the gates of hell to protect the liberty and livelihood of every South Carolina Indian." Unless that includes trying to keep every South Carolina Indian from getting the Rona, in which case we're on the side of the Rona. Mm-hmm. We are. Because freedom. Y'all is free to get as much Rona and spread as much Rona as you can, because South Carolina is the home, the absolute home of stupid treachery against the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. Yield. Bottom of the gates of hell. I'm sure some asshole was saying that in 1859 and 1862. Well, bottom to the gates of hell. Well, some of that fire got loose from hell and scorched a right smart part of South Carolina and India. Stan. Jesus, these people. Exactly. Sit, Liberty. Sit. Thank you, Ralphs. Oh, we all do the bits together now, don't we? That's wonderful. Somehow it doesn't make him Churchillian, McGovernor, to say, "Oh, we're going to fight him." No. Mm-mm. Yeah, we go. We'll have house to house fighting them Bidenites here with their free vaccines, trying to keep people from dying. Oh, we're going to fight them on the rooftops. We will fight them at the raw bars of Myrtle Beach. We'll fight them on the golf courses at Hilton Head. Yes, we will. We'll fight them there. We will fight them at the gates of the beloved University of South Carolina. We will fight them. We will fight them on John C. Calhoun's old filthy slave plantation at Clemson. We're going to fight them. Requiring people to get a vaccine to keep them from dying. What kind of freedom is that? I ain't been this mad since they told me about how 160 years ago they took away my great 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 grandpappy's human beings. Oh damn! Still gets me all worked up. Wait, what? Regarding Republicans line up as a miserable shit-eating death cult. Brother Deacon Asa says, did you mean to say the GO pieces of shit? I didn't, but I probably should have, because that works real good. Real good indeed. Oh, and back to something Bilbo Rick said toward the beginning of the program when we were talking about that lawyer got her phone seized, you know, for engaging in a possible, you know, allegedly possibly engaging in a seditious conspiracy with the other oath keepers. Bilbo Rick gives us a little background. Said, per the U.S. Attorney's Manual, A.G. Merrick Garland is required to personally approve of all search warrants issued to attorneys in connection with their representation of clients. Not surprisingly, it's very difficult and rare to obtain search warrants for attorneys, so that means that the evidence must have actually been fairly clear and convincing where A.G. Garland was concerned. Thank you for that, Bill. Well, that's most helpful. Wow. Like I said, a lot of thorns this here Thursday. Yeah. Oh, and don't forget Darlington, South Carolina. David reminds us. The Southern 500, they just had a big event over there. Well, I can't tell if they were coughing from the Rona or the exhaust fumes, though. I mean, whew. Gets might smelly in the stands, but whew, noisy. You got to yell. You got to yell if you want to be heard. And, of course, that means you spread more Rona particles along the way. Yeah. Wow. So, let's see, what else do we have? Oh, I mentioned the we started the program. One of the stories we started with had to do with the museum exhibit in Missouri. And we got another Missouri story along the same lines. A man named John Wallace, a young teacher in the public schools in Missouri, remember the story out of Georgia a few nights ago where the young white male scholar attacked a child who had wrapped themselves in the pride flag? Yeah. Well, 22-year-old brand new teacher John Wallace, W-A-L-L-I-S, at Neosho Junior High School, the speech and debate teacher there, as well as the theater teacher and the teacher of world mythology. Well, he put up a pride flag in his classroom. And he wanted to make sure that all of his students knew that they were welcome in his classroom. And said, you know, within the first week, I had almost 10 students come up to me and personally thank me because they wouldn't know where else to go if they hadn't seen that flag. That spoke to me a lot for them to be able to come to me and say that it meant that I was doing what I intended to do. You got to think that those children were better for having teacher John Wallace in their lives. Well, teacher John Wallace is not in their lives anymore. Because one, I'm sure, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican parent done complained about the pride flag. And so the administrators of the junior high school met with Mr. Wallace and told him to take down the flag. And he did. And then the students asked him where the pride flag went. He said, I answered truthfully while expressing that if students had a problem with who I was, there were other open classes. So the administration came back to Mr. Wallace and said, here's a letter. We want you to sign this letter because you cannot, and when you sign this letter, you're promising you will not discuss, quote, human sexuality or my own personal sexuality in the classroom. And Mr. Wallace then resigned. The Kansas City Star, with the report, said he was hired on August 13th, and his last day at work was September 1st, Wednesday, when the school found themselves a replacement teacher. I can only imagine what that teacher is. One of the saddest things out of this miserable story and these miserable people is the fact that young 22-year-old John Wallace came to the realization that he wanted to be a teacher because that was his hometown, Neosho, Missouri. He graduated from the high school there in 2017. Writing 3 days after his last day at work, he said, my administrators chose to believe the bigotry of parents over their building's teacher. To say I am devastated is an understatement. But the loss is not Mr. Wallace's. The loss is the children's. And the loss is the community's. Because it just means that Neosho wants to be a barbaric, backwards, backwater, miserable, bigoted, rotten, probably xenophobic, racist little hotbed of hate. Neosho sits about 10 miles from the Oklahoma state line. Yeah. And I feel sorry. I feel sorry for the kids there. I feel sorrier even for the child of the parent who complained, because apparently they've already done a fine job of teaching that child to hate.
And all he was trying to do was protect some of the most fragile, marginalized students in that community. Mr. Wallace came to his job with a sense of mission. He said, I didn't have any teachers that were openly accepting of LGBTQ plus students. And so for me, as an out educator in Southwest Missouri, I know what my experience was, and I didn't want that to be the same experience for my students. And the thing is, he even asked his administrators for permission. He said, I want to put up the pride flag, and I want to put up a sign that says, in this classroom, everyone is welcome. He said, I left that meeting with the understanding that they had advised against it, but not instructed me not to. He tucked the flag in a bookshelf. It wasn't hanging from the rafters or anything. He hung the sign over his whiteboard. And then kids began to come to him and say and tell him thank you. Disgusting. And they got him to resign so there won't be any unemployment. And the letter from the administrator said, if you're unable to present the curriculum in a manner that keeps your personal agenda on sexuality out of your narrative and the classroom discussions, we will ultimately terminate your employment. You will not have any references to sexuality or gender displayed in your classroom. Really? In a theater classroom? Really? No gender? I mean, do those neo-maxi-zoom dweebies even understand what theater is? Do they have the first foggy comprehension of the history of theater? Of the fact that women were not allowed to be on stage in Shakespeare's day? And, you know, the hypocrisy was not lost on Mr. Wallace. He said, the problem I have with it, obviously, is that it's specific to me, and as an openly gay man, that seems a bit discriminatory. Because if you're a straight teacher, you can talk about your spouse, your kids, you can have a picture of your family in the classroom, but I have a flag and then all of a sudden there's a problem. You know, it didn't make any sense. Interestingly enough, we started the program earlier talking about a strong member of the Missouri legislature named Crystal Quaid. Well, she's in this story too. She is, again, the minority leader of the Missouri House, and she sent a message of support to Mr. Wallace, thanking him for the dedication he had shown to his kids. And, yes, he has, as a matter of fact, filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, making it plain, I want people to know that I'm not doing this because I hate Neosho. I'm doing this because we need to have policies in place, especially for public education, that supports all of our students and all of our educators. What a brave young man. And with this administration, he may very well win. And I hope he does. And I hope he can stay safe. What a hero. What a hero he is. What courage to stand up in the face of that kind of trash. Good God. Matt in San Francisco says, that teacher, what message does that send to all the gay kids? Stay in the closet or get fired? I hate these people. Yeah, Me too. Because a long, 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 long time ago, I was one of those kids in the theater department. And I kept everything to myself.
but we were an odd lot. The drama jocks, as we called ourselves. It was not a time for being out anything. Late 70s, early 80s. Not in Northwest Alabama or any other part of Alabama. But I was very fortunate. I had kind and loving teachers. Also, could be stern. Did not. I pushed the envelope and they pushed back. But it was nice to have a place you could be safe. And for those kids who privately approached Mr. Wallace there in Neosho, Missouri, they know damn good and well, I mean, among other things, yeah, stay in the closet or get fired. But they know something else, Matt. They are not welcome there. They are students at sufferance. And that's a hell of a thing to live through, starting with junior high school and all the way up through high school. Yeah. Something curious about the gay teacher, Steve in New York says, never once did he make it about his sexuality, but about the sexuality of kids who may not feel welcome anywhere else. Well, yeah, I mean, he was probably channeling things that he had known and felt when he was a student there not that long ago. And make it better for them. All are welcome, Steve says. Reminds me of so many church signs I see. All are welcome here. What they really mean is all are welcome here except LGBTQ plus folk, black folk, women folk, etc. That's not always how it is. I've praised and praised and praised the little town where I live. Those all are welcome signs are to be found all over town. Restaurants, outdoor equipment stores, bars, and they mean it, and they live it. And it makes the town a hell of a lot more interesting, a lot more fun, and more than anything else, a lot more kind. That's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to the Hornin, because those who attend will be absolutely stunned at what a delightfully friendly place Fayetteville is. And I really hope we can build some momentum behind that. I'd love to go ahead and start booking cabins, rooms, what have you. If you are at all interested in the Hornin, pop over to GoFundBob.com. Ugh, Bob. GoFundBob.com, and there's a post down there that has all the details about the Hornin. And you're going to be hard-pressed to say that you've ever eaten better barbecue. That's for darn sure. I feel confident. I guess the American disease is spreading again. When you operate in a parliamentary system as opposed to the American system, you've got a lot more small, marginal political parties. And so Canada has one called the People's Party of Canada, splitters, and they're just a little knot of hard cases and dead enders and white wingers. And earlier this week, one of the local officials from the People's Party of Canada, I don't know why I'm laughing, but he threw a handful of gravel at Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He was campaigning in London, Ontario, in advance of the September 20th election. And he was on his way back to his bus, and somebody hurled a handful of gravel at him. There are no names released as yet, but the People's Party of Canada did expel one of the local officials for chucking the gravel. So, sorry, Canada. We didn't mean to be so toxic, but, you know, we sneeze and y'all get the flu, and same thing applies to Australia. Sorry about that. And no word yet on whether any charges will be filed. But Maxime Bernier, who leads the People's Party, lost a bid to be the head of the opposition Conservative Party, so he went off and founded a splinter group. They got all of 1.6% of the national vote in 2019, didn't get a single seat in Parliament. But now, they're up at about 9% in current polling, and adopting the language of south of the border, he says he's a limited government conservative, eh? Right. And, of course, Canada has its own anti-vax protesters. Anti-vaxxers showing up to heckle Justin Trudeau at his rallies. But, heck, Canada is way far out in front of the new 90 states of America. They're about 74% Canada is fully vaccinated. And, of course, they're grunting and barking and hooting, the anti-vaxxers and the spreadnecks and the COVIDiots, the mask holes. Because before Biden ever introduced any vaccine mandates, Justin Trudeau was there. Relating to domestic travel, relating to candidates of his own party. And, of course, the Conservative Party and Maxime Bernier, I guess they bark and they grunt about how freedom is under attack by a politician who doesn't want more Canadians to die. I can't figure it. Yeah. Stop that, Steve. And Steve said the horn in. For some reason, I couldn't help regarding the butts you're going to barbecue. As a gay man, there's nothing like a tasty piece of ass. Oh, God. Well, you can let yourself out, Steve, because, you know, you're going to hell. But that's okay, because, well, Oral Roberts won't be there. He's in heaven. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, following up, remember the story of the massacre in Florida over the weekend? Well, we found out, police have since found out after the dick measuring contest that Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd got into a couple of days ago. Yeah, we would have shot him full of holes if he'd have come out with a gun. Really? But it turns out that the shooter, this just gets weirder and weirder. This past Saturday, he stopped by the family's home there in Lakeland before he went to a friend's house nearby to pick up a first aid kit. Now, dude was methed out of his mind. He was methed up. Maybe he was a Crystal Methodist. I don't know. He told people he was on his way to do relief work for Hurricane Ida, and his friend offered up this first aid kit. And then that was when he saw the victim, Justice Gleason, mowing his yard, and his 11-year-old daughter was playing in the yard. And meth head Riley decided the girl was named Amber, and the meth told him that she was suicidal. And here we go again. No, we know how he voted.
She was being held hostage by a supposed sex trafficking ring that God told him to confront. It goes without saying the child's name was not Amber. No, there was no sex trafficking ring. And, well, we know where all that sex trafficking ring horseshit comes from. It's been spread by people like, oh, I don't know, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cuball, or Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, and the rest of the screwball caucus of the House minority. Lots more details coming out. The killer was wearing body armor. He was carrying three weapons. He fired at least 100 rounds in the main home and in a smaller house in the back, where he killed a woman, 62 years old, named Catherine Delgado. She was the first that he murdered. And, of course, Sheriff Grady Judd continues to dick measure. He was a coward, an absolute coward. He looks like a man, but he's not a man. He's a sniveling coward. Jesus, I'm surprised he didn't call him a panty waste. God almighty. And, his girlfriend, the killer's girlfriend, said, yeah, you know, he had a job as a security guard, and he was like a security guard at a church, and, after he got that job at the church, he started talking about how he was talking to God. That's usually... But see, that's the country we live in, isn't it? Well, yeah, he said he was talking to God and everything, but I didn't think anything was going to come of it. Because, I mean, everybody's out there talking to God. The Vice President of the United States had a hissy a few years back when somebody said, maybe if you're hearing voices and you think it's God, maybe you ought to seek help. You're persecuting me for my religion. Yeah. Interestingly, although he said he was all methed up, the Polk County Sheriff's Department's found no evidence of meth anywhere in or around his home. No. But they did find a shitload of illegal steroids. Yeah, steroids, right. Right. Roid rage. Yeah. Oh, going back to the gravel chucker in Canada. More info, please, says Ron and Raleigh. Let's be more specific. What kind of gravel was it? Was it pea gravel? Number three or four paving gravel? Riprap? I need a clearer picture for my theater of the mind. I'm guessing pea gravel because it's easier to pick up and chuck. Yeah. It's all in the details, isn't it, Ron? Lee in New York says, where was Amber? My guess is Amber's eating pizza in the basement of a pizza parlor that doesn't have a basement in D.C. Comet Ping Pong Pizza. Meanwhile, the murderer in Florida, the coward, is recovering from his gunshot wound. Oh, and we had a Sean Spicer sighting recently, because the Biden administration shit-canned Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conjob because they were on the sitting on the board of the service academies, military academies. Spicer was put on the board of the Naval Academy by Nitwit Nero, who wanted to go back to steam catapults on aircraft carriers. Jesus Christ. And now that he's been bounced, Spicy is having a big sad. Yeah.
Biden, after Biden asked him to resign from the Board of Visitors at the United States Naval Academy. According to Business Insider, Biden sent letters to 11 Trump-era appointees to military academy advisory boards requesting their resignations.
And, you know, you can resign or I'll fire you. It's your choice. So they're pissing and moaning all over the place. And with some people, it's not going down quite so well. No. Spicy got roundly mocked by the folks on The View. It was downright, you know, sometimes it can be refreshing. A lot of it's just theater, but wow, yeah. Take a listen.
Explain why some holdovers from the previous administrations, like Sean Spicer.
Poor Whoopi can't even.
Like Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway are being asked to resign or be fired from military panels and stuff. You know, the last guy appointed them to these different panels, and Conway and Spicer say they won't comply. Take a look. Get out.
I will let others evaluate whether they think Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer and others were qualified or not political to serve on these boards. But the president's qualification requirements are not your party registration. They are whether you're qualified to serve and whether you're aligned with the values of this administration.
I'm announcing tonight for the first time that I will not be submitting my resignation and I will be joining a lawsuit to fight this. Don't you dare ever minimize or question my service to this nation. You got it?
Yeah. We got it, Sean. But this is what happens when a new president takes over. See, this is how stuff's supposed to be. Y'all don't know that because you don't know. Because the guy that you were working under didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
But this is what happens. You elect a president.
Yeah.
And he gets the people he wants to sprinkle in there. And then after their 4 or 8 mm-hmm. years, then they go away. They like the man should have went from the post office. Bye, sir. You should have been gone.
Yeah.
I find it ironic because I remember the administration was saying these people serve at my pleasure. I don't know if you guys remember Yovanovitch and mm-hmm. some of the ambassadors that were there. Look, I'm an equal opportunity criticizer when it comes to the Constitution and what the job is.
Right.
These people serve at the pleasure of the president. To me, this is political ping pong, yeah. Right? It's something that when there's a president, they say, it's my turn. I get to put my people in there.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. And most of the ambassadors.
In case you're wondering who that voice is, that is once upon a time African-American rising Republican superstar Mia Love. Once. And no, it's not political ping pong. It is the right that inures constitutionally to the chief executive. The right. Constitutional. Constitutional powers. But she can't quite bring herself to say that Nitwit Nero was entirely corrupt and he put Spicy and Kellyanne Cobweb, thank you, Brother Deacon, on there to do his filthy bidding in his absence. Because, well, she's still a Republican. Oh, dear.
By the way, I want you to know most of these appointed positions, they're returning favors. They're friends of people. You were either with them
yes.
or you gave them a lot of money in a campaign.
Sure, right.
I've been through these campaigns.
Yeah.
They are returning a favor. Sure. You know, there are several people, case in point. You could look at Jeff Flake, who is now the ambassador of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
He supported President Biden, and he's the ambassador of Turkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I have to take up for Kellyanne, though, because they say she doesn't have any military experience. Didn't she fight in the Revolutionary War?
Ow. Battle of Bowling Green.
Yeah, I was positive.
I actually like
I just
that
want to know what time it is, because this took a long time to get this one joke to come.
No,
she had
that was planned.
One joke the whole show, and then this was the one. But
to Mia's point, you know, when I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office, when there was a new president, you knew that there would be a new U.S. attorney,
right. Yeah.
And then everybody was kind of cleaning up their desk a little bit, because you were like, okay, I may be here or I may not be here in the next couple of months. Yeah. It's just how it goes. And as far as Sean Spicer is concerned, I know that he joined the Navy.
Wasn't he hiding behind a bush, though?
He was hiding behind a bush. And he also was on Dancing with the Stars.
Exactly.
So if he wants to be on a panel for Dancing with the Stars, I think it's totally cool.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't think he should be on the Naval Academy's advisory board.
Because he was in the Navy.
It was a political appointment. And he was also appointed three or four months
before
Biden
I want us all to remember this. Remember this when there is a Republican president again, that these people serve at the pleasure of the president.
Well, here's the beauty of this. That used to be always front and center in my head until that other man decided that he was not going to allow Merrick Garland to sit up and serve at the president's request. I get all of it. I appreciate all of it. What I'm having a big problem with is we try to do it. You know, we try to talk about all the stuff that should be talked about.
Right.
But then I see stuff like this, and it's like, we should all have a civics lesson about how this works.
Yeah.
If we were teaching civics in school, none of this would be a question, because we know.
I'm glad with you on that.
All right.
And you know, we do not do enough of that.
No.
We do not. You make me leave. Look at him. Look at him. Okay, bye. We'll be right back.
Sometimes they're just fun. Sometimes it's just a kick. Oh, a little bit of breaking news. Proud Boys losing their shit soon. Anticipate the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters executive staff to put their Aloha shirts on and throw a hissy. All of this in Los Angeles, because Los Angeles is now officially the first really huge, humongous school district in the entire country who said, screw it. If you're 12 or older, you have to have a vaccine. Good on them. And it wasn't one of those 4-2s or 5-1. No, by God, it was 6-0. The LA School District Board of Education voting to require vaccines for the student body in their charge. You know, school systems stand in what the law calls in loco parentis for its young scholars when they are in their care, custody, and control. So what kind of maggot hissies, what sort of spread neck conniptions will this engender? You know it will. You absolutely know it will. They're going to make my precious lumpkin get... Wrong accent, I know. What, they're going to make my precious lumpkin, like, get those Bill Gates liquid barcodes? I mean, we're already giving them a big whopping dose of horse paste in their bowl of cereal every morning. Ain't that enough? Alex Jones done told me it's an antiviral that won the Nobel Prize. Yeah. For fuck's sake. But yeah, I'm sure there'll be protests and marching in the streets and hooting and grunting, because 25% of the population of a country the size of the United States really can, as Joe Biden said, do some damn damage. But still, it's the right thing to do, and it needs to be noted as such.
Oh, and remember how, we were talking a few minutes ago about the murderous Marine in Florida. Well, last month a new indictment came out from a federal court. And it had to do with a neo-Nazi terror cell and a plan to attack the power grid last fall. We've talked about this case before, but now it's, there's more detail. The neo-Nazis wanted to create a white ethno-state. They wanted to attack the power grid last fall. They wanted all that to lead up to a series of assassinations. They called themselves BSN, and their founders, Liam Montgomery Collins and Paul James Krychcik, and they were gathering more to their cause. Yeah. Well, a number of ex-Marines. A number of ex-Marines were caught up in it. It was August 18th when the new indictment came down. Conspiracy to sabotage an energy facility. They wanted these neo-Nazis to attack. Yeah, and you know, thank you, Merrick Garland, for mentioning that you were going to be, that we were going to be on alert against terrorists within this country, because, hello? They were to attack the power grid both for the purpose of creating general chaos and to provide cover and ease of escape in those areas in which they planned to undertake assassinations and other desired operations to further their goal of creating a white ethno-state. Who did they want to kill? Well, they wanted to kill Alicia Garza. They wanted to kill Patrice Cullors. Those are the co-founders of Black Lives Matter. The FBI reached out to them and said, y'all need to be careful, because we found your name on a list in this neo-Nazi's house in, where else? Boise! When they arrested him. Yeah. Wow. Then there was Jordan Duncan, a Marine Corps veteran, also charged in the conspiracy, who went to Boise. And he worked as a contractor for the Navy. I have to check on this noise. Stand by. Apparently a siren, some vehicle with a siren wailing went past, and every dog in the neighborhood is now howling. I was just afraid something had gotten hit or something. Oh, geez. Three members of BSN, Krychcik and Duncan and Joseph Moreno, who at the time, by the way, was a member of the New Jersey National Guard. Could somebody tell the Pentagon that they've got a neo-Nazi problem? Yeah, maybe. They had gotten together in Boise, July of 2020. They did live fire weapons training. And they started surveilling BLM Boise. Really? There's a BLM in Boise? Sure that wasn't Bureau of Land Management? This kind of sounds like some ammonium nitrate Bundy stuff. No. They were actually talking at one point about opening fire on protesters on October the 1st of last year. Duncan wrote, how the BSN's fena gonna be pulling up to Chipotle after hitting legs? And Krychcik responded, Death Squad, Assassin's Creed hoodies and suppressed 22 pistols. People freaking out. About what? The end of democracy. One can hope. Yeah. And there were several of them. Another one, Justin Hermanson.
they were following a previous plan of attacking the power grid using assault rifles in an attempt to explode a power substation. And apparently, according to the government's case, this Khrushchev Nazi had made a list of transformers and substations and other aspects of the power grid at about 12 different places all over Idaho and nearby states, and was getting ready to roll when they when he was taken down. And they will be arraigned on the new charges in January. Mm-hmm. And by the way, where did they meet? Old Khrushchev and Collins? Why, they met in a neo-Nazi online forum. Because, of course, because freedom. But that neo-Nazi online forum had been founded by a Russian nationalist named Alexander Slavros Mukhidinov 10 years ago. And good God, the shit that they're planning and planning is still. We have problems. Lord, we have problems. And how many, you know, how many people will hear that story in this country in which we amuse ourselves to death? Yeah. So, it's getting worse. It really, really is. Lee in New York, Pentagon neo-Nazi problem. Are you sure? They volunteer, no problem, right? Yeah. Oh, and in loco parentis, what I was talking about earlier. Robin, does that mean you have crazy parents? I've been seeing a lot of these at school board meetings lately. Kind of, well, I mean, yeah, I guess. Mercy. And then there's the comedy portion of the program. It's so fun watching these anti-vax freaks find out things that they didn't think were, yeah. So we've talked about Todd Starnes in the past. He's one of these weird little right-wing goons. He's a fetus fetishist, and he's got a pretty bad Hitler haircut going for him. And, he's shocked. He just found out today, Todd Starnes did. Well, he used to be with Fox. He got canned. Because he was a little too eager in agreeing with another guest on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda that all Democrats worship Moloch. Yeah. And he found out that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda has a vaccine mandate because, and this was a beautiful moment, President Biden ratted them out. Well, I mean, even Fox News has a vaccine mandate. Employees at Fox News have to show their proof of vaccination. And Starnes reacted. Biden says even Fox News has a mandatory vaccine policy. Is that true? That can't be true. Have Hannity and Tucker and the others gotten the vaccine? That just can't be true. Yeah. It's true. Stand by, please.
Y'all, I'm having a conversation with Ferg right now, and I need to. It's nothing like emergency dire, but I need to talk to him about this. So I'm gonna knock things off about 35 minutes early. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for tuning in this evening. Back for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. For the overnight crew, if you want to help out, we are at $550. It'll be $850 tomorrow. But anything we can do to take that down will be wonderful. Thank you, everybody. In lieu of the usual credits and everything, I will simply say, be well, stay safe, avoid the Todd Starnes of the world. Right? You know, plague people, because they are. Later.